Last week, we spent some time talking about commandments and about obedience, and pointed out from the discussion by Whiteside and Nichols that there are occasions when obedience becomes a test. And we will talk more about obedience. One of the things that we pointed out last week was that obedience involves the decision to do what God wants us to do. Not necessarily just the decision to do what seems right in a particular situation. Tonight we're going to talk about what Nichols and Whiteside call moral and positive commandments. I refer to them using some different words. I talk about the moral code, and then as opposed to the moral code, I talk about covenant code. So let's think about that for just a minute. There is no statement biblically that of a difference in obedience. But I think we see it as we look at what the Bible describes. I think we see it in terms of a difference in the commandments that were given. First, let's talk about moral commands or the moral code. Now, it still comes from God. Understand that all of the commands that we're going to talk about come from God, but these have the nature of regulating our natural relationships. And when I say natural relationships, you know, so it just seems to us, it appears to us, that some things are right within themselves and some things are wrong within themselves. It's just the nature of the thing. For instance, it seems that there's an inherent relationship between the creature and the creator, and that demands reverence for God. That's a moral code. And this moral code would also suggest that stealing, lying, murder, those are things that are just inherently wrong by the nature of the thing. Now, I did spend some time working with inmates at the Highland Mountain Correctional System when we lived in Eagle River, Alaska. And I worked primarily with male sex offenders. That's not all that I worked with, but I primarily worked with male sex offenders. And one of the things that I discovered when I talked to those male sex offenders is that they think that them having sexual relationships with children is a good thing. They put that into the category of the moral code. So we're gonna say some things that they would disagree with. I think I would make the argument that society just in general, everywhere, everybody realizes that for a 40-year-old man to have sexual relations with a 3-year-old is immoral, that it violates the will of God. It's by virtue of the very nature of the thing. But understand, they don't believe that. They honestly think that they're doing this child a favor, introducing them to a loving sexual relationship that goes beyond what they might experience if they didn't have this person to guide them in their life. So there are commands that God gives us that regulate these moral ideas. Comments. Yeah, Carol.
I just want to sort of challenge that idea that they want to think that. They just say that because they're lying. Otherwise, they wouldn't threaten the child with physical violence or injury if they tell anybody about what happened.
Well, sometimes they don't. Sometimes they don't threaten them.
But most
they're,
of the time,
they're happy to admit what they've done. Some do threaten children, but some they're perfectly happy with what they've done, and they don't understand why they're in jail. They don't understand why they've been in prison.
Yeah, but of the four that I know, different cases, there was always a threat and an intimidation against that child. So.
Yeah, there is threat and intimidation in some cases, but I will tell you, the vast majority of the people that I talked to who had been incarcerated and who were in the male sex offender treatment program believed, I think honestly believed, that they were doing that child a favor.
Did you ever ask them if they intimidated the child to stay
yeah.
alive? And they said they didn't.
And they were never accused of doing that. They were just accused of violating the child. But they were not accused of threatening or intimidating or anything like that. And, I mean, that's why NARAL exists, which is a at least a social group that includes these people. And they're open about it. They publish their names, their what they've done. It's incredible. But I think that makes the point. The fact that we find it incredible makes the point that everybody, or almost everybody, recognizes that this is wrong. They've always been recognized. These moral rights have, for the most part, always been recognized in well-regulated societies. I know of no society that practices open murder. I know of some societies that will let people die. And it must be said that we may have gotten to the point where we're willing to recognize that some people need to be killed. And we have medically assisted suicide now, at least in Canada. We have it in England. We have it in a number of different places in the world. It amazes me that it exists. But it does exist. Nazi Germany killed children that were born with disabilities. It was infanticide. Yeah, Bill.
There are a lot of us that feel that abortion is murder, which is very openly practiced and worshipped by some in our society. And I've just recently read that there are cases where disabled people with on donor lists have their organs taken before they die.
I read that. I read that report, and it wasn't just disabled people.
Yeah, because
It was people who had signed a donor card.
so our society in many ways is sick.
I would agree. I would agree. Yeah, Kim.
I think we're kind of getting focused on your examples. I think that the point is what we kind of generally accept. What your examples are, I think, are good ones, but I think we have to understand that it's a progress. You know, not everybody you interacted with thought a certain way, and not things that we always see on TV are done in a certain way. But they're generalities about things that we accept as just being moral or ethical or right or wrong, just generally accept. And I think that it comes from God. What you're the examples are, it comes from Satan, and it comes from that evil. And then maybe some of the people that you talk to, and I know you work there as a psychologist, but some people that you talk to could try to be pulling the wool over your eyes and just saying, "Oh yeah, it's per," knowing full well that it's wrong. I mean, why do we have in this country underground sex trafficking of minors and women? Because it's underground because people are making a whole lot of money and they know it's wrong. If they didn't know it was wrong, they do it out in the open and make a whole lot of money. So this kind of thing is so common, but it comes from Satan. So I guess that's the point, is that these are examples of
Yeah.
people that have so far gone from what God instituted and so far gone from what is moral and ethical and correct, and just that we just instinctively know as a human being. Am I missing something?
No, that's the point that I'm trying to make.
Okay.
We instinctively know that this is wrong. Okay? I think it's because God, in the beginning, gave us that information. It wasn't written down for us, but He gave us that information, and it's been transmitted through society's means ever since that time. Yeah, Carol.
I was just going to say, in some of my studies, the Indians would be thrown out of the tribe if they did some things that were immoral. But it was quite all right to go to your enemy's camp and do the same things, to steal to horses or women or kill somebody or whatever. It was okay. But in that camp, you didn't do it or you weren't there.
Yeah.
So it sort of
Justify it.
justifies it, but
Good
putting it
point.
aside.
It's a good point. Romans 2nd chapter, verses 14 and 15. The apostle makes an interesting point. Romans 2, 14. When Gentiles who do not have the law, that they don't, the Gentiles didn't have the old covenant. Okay? When Gentiles who do not have the law by nature do what the law requires, they're a law to themselves, even though they do not have the law. They show that the work of the law is written on their hearts, while their conscience also bears witness, and their conflicting thoughts accuse or even excuse them. So, this being able to understand that some things are inherently right, some things are inherently wrong, leads to people who do moral things. It's not necessarily because it's obedience to God, but they do the things that the law says that they ought to do. Okay? And we're all familiar with the Ten Commandments: thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not murder, or thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness. The law also talks about those things. But even when you don't have the covenant, even when you don't have the law, you still know that these are things that should not be done. And so by and large, society is willing to say, we will punish people who do those things. Okay? So by and large, people don't lie, they don't steal, they don't commit murder, they don't do those things that seem inherently wrong. Make sense? Then there's another idea. There are also positive commandments or covenant commandments. However you want to describe these. Some commandments don't arise from a natural relationship. In fact, there are times and examples where a positive commandment seems contrary to a natural relationship. Okay? The one that immediately leaps to my mind is Genesis 22, verses 1 and 2. Abraham is told to take his son Isaac and sacrifice him on an altar. That just, in my mind, violates the natural and fundamental relationship between a father and a son. It's a commandment, but it's not one of those moral codes. So sometimes there are commandments that are outside of those moral codes. And I call them covenant commandments. Okay? And that's just the way that I refer to them. The Bible doesn't talk about a difference between the commandments. But it seems reasonable to me to look at the commandments and see the difference. This kind of commandment rests entirely on the lawgiver and his will. It's different than looking at the relationship between a mother and her child and saying that that's a moral relationship and saying you need to kill your child. Yeah, Bill.
That brings up something I was thinking of when Solomon said to cut the baby in two. That was like Abraham and God.
Well,
it was totally unnatural, but the natural mother said, no, don't give it to her because she knew the natural law.
Right. That's the moral code side of it. You're absolutely right. It's a good illustration of the moral code. Solomon took advantage of the fact that people recognize that moral code, and he used that to find out who was the natural mother. Okay? Yeah, Carol.
Well, in your example of Abraham and Isaac, I mean, the command that God gives Abraham is even contrary to what Abraham knows that God commanded to him and what God promised. So I can imagine him, am I sick? Am I schizophrenic? Am I hearing voices in my head? Is God really asking me this? I mean, there's that. And then, of course, other things, too. But
he was willing to say,
yeah,
Because this is the express will of the Creator, I must do it. I must respond.
That's the test of faith.
Yeah, Kim.
My take on all of this is there are occasions and great examples like Abraham and Isaac where God's commandment comes up against that moral code. And that's why it makes it so shocking, because it's so opposed to everything that we know. And of course, I'm attributing this, my insights to God, and I don't mean to be doing that. But I think God used that to illustrate what happened with Jesus at the cross, because this is human sacrifice, and he never required human sacrifice. And this is so opposed to everything that we think is morally good and acceptable. He was murdered, not because of anything he had done, but because of what we had done. And so there's a foreshadowing, but I think that that's true at the cross, is that it is so opposed to moral code, to moral commands from God, that we're jolted by it. And so I think maybe that's where these examples are so pivotal in the scriptures, because they foreshadow what Jesus did for us.
And I think these examples force us to think about the difference between the moral code and what God says. Okay? Moral code does not reign supreme. God reigns supreme. Yeah, go.
An example of Abraham and Isaac. God tested Abraham. It was a test. God knew what he was going to do. He was not going to let that child die.
Okay, but Abraham didn't know that.
No. And that was an example to us of trusting faith.
Well, that's a good point. And there are a lot of examples or a lot of lessons that we can learn from that example. But I think we still have to come to grips with the fact that God reigns supreme, not moral code. So there are a lot of other things that God tells us to do that really don't have any foundation in the moral code. Sabbath laws have no inherent reason for their existence. It's just the will of the Creator. God said when he gave manna, do not gather it on the Sabbath day. If you gather it on the Sabbath day, it'll go bad. Do not gather it on the Sabbath day. There is no moral code that would be violated by gathering it on the Sabbath. There is no moral code that is violated by me deciding that I'm going to work 7 days a week. It's just the will of God. And so it's possible to look at that and see a testing. See that we have to be impressed with the supremacy of God's will. I think it's also in the commandment to Naaman. Go and dip 7 times in the River Jordan. There is no moral code that suggests that the Jordan River possesses any healing power. It was just a commandment from God. And if you read 2 Kings 5, verses 1 through 14, you see Naaman going through that thought process. He says, well, what's so special about the Jordan River? There's nothing special about the Jordan River. I could do this in Arbana or Parfar, one of the rivers where I live. They're a lot cleaner than the Jordan. That would be the place I would dip if I wanted to rid myself of a disease, not the Jordan River. And in fact, you know, because the Jordan is such a slow-moving stream, it's going to carry a lot more toxins and a lot more bad bacteria than those rivers that he knew about. Yeah.
In my head, this little girl was telling him this. Was there somebody else that told him to dip in the Jordan?
Yeah, it was his slave girl who said, go talk to the prophet.
So
it was
little,
the prophet that told him to go talk to.
This little girl was God's mouthpiece.
Okay, yeah, she was encouraging him, listen to the prophet. And he, in going through this reasoning process, he had to think about if God told you to go do something spectacular, you would do it, right? But he told you to do something really simple. Go dip in the River Jordan. And baptism is the same way. God said, I want you to be baptized. That's a part of salvation. And you think, well, God needs to tell me to do something magnificent. I need to go follow the way of the cross in Jerusalem on my hands and knees. And, you know, my knees are ragged from crawling up the steps. And that seems like it would have more moral relationship to forgiveness than just being baptized. Yeah, Bill.
Well, that brings up a point. The Gospel of John 3:36.
Okay.
And I lost it. Can you read that?
I'm getting there. John 3 at verse 36. Whoever believes in the Son has eternal life. Whoever does not obey the Son shall not see life, but the wrath of God remains upon him.
And he equates there, belief and obedience are the same thing. If we believe, we're going to obey.
Okay. I don't have I can see your point. Sometimes we obey just because we can see a moral relationship between the two things. But not always. And baptism is one of those things. I cannot tell you why God decided that you should be baptized in order to have salvation. Now, I can come up with all kinds of fancy reasoning. It depicts death, the burial, and the resurrection. You know, we go down into the water. We're buried with Christ in the water of baptism. We're raised to walk in newness of life. It's a washing, and it makes sense. It's called a washing of regeneration. So I can find all kinds of reasons why I think that makes sense. But in reality, God never said that it makes sense in terms of the moral code. It's just what I said to do. I told my kids that fairly infrequently. Why do I have to do that? Because I said. Okay. That didn't guarantee obedience, by the way. And I tried not to say that any more than I had to. But it is a legitimate response. Do it because I said. And that's what God did. God says on occasion. Do it because I said to do it. Not because we can reason some, or not because we can fathom some reason for my saying it. So I think it's important for us to understand this distinction. And as much as we need to understand the distinction, we also need to understand the idea of intentionality. We intentionally obey God. And in the same way, we intentionally disobey God. So we'll talk a little bit about intentionality and why that's so important in God's whole scheme and why it plays such a major role in that scheme. Other comments, and then we'll be done for the evening. Comments from folks at home? If there's nothing else, then let's conclude with a prayer. I will mention that with the address for David Mulkey has been posted on the bulletin board in the hallway. So you might want to check that. You might want to send him a note just to let him know that we're thinking about him. And the memorial service will be for Phyllis will be on the 1st. That's Friday. I will get you the address of the place where it's going to be held and the time when it's going to be held. And I'll send that to everyone in an email as soon as I can contact David and get the particulars. So let's remember David. Let's remember Nolan and Amelia. Let's remember everyone who is suffering from diseases or is grieving. And let's do what we can to help them.